Palo Alto Software is making the perfect malware. Microsoft is bringing back sexy to headshots. And inflation may be up, but ransomware costs are down. All these stories and more on today's episode of MSP Dispatch.
This episode is presented by OIT VoIP. Enhance your clients' communication abilities with our VoIP solution, featuring integrated billing, on-demand training, and live US support. Collaborate seamlessly with Microsoft Teams integration and put your entire phone system in your pocket with MobileX. Improve your offerings and increase profitability with reliable service for 1/10 of the average MSP acquisition cost. To learn more, visit oit.co or dial 844-CALL-OIT.
Good morning and welcome to the April 23rd episode of MSP Dispatch, your source for news, community events, and commentary in the MSP channel. My name is Tony Francisco, and today I am joined by my co-host, Mr. Tom Lawrence. Tom, how are you doing today? How is life? I am absolutely 100% convinced now that you and Jason Slagle are actually the same person because you're never actually seen at the same time. But... how are you doing?
I am doing well. And I notice you're right. Me and Jason have never actually, I don't think we've ever done one. It's either you and Jason or me and Jason. So you have right to be suspicious.
It's a little
sus.
There
could be a lot hiding under that beard he has.
I said, I think Tom Lawrence is actually in the beard. It's kind of like you pop out. Anyway, you know what we should probably cover?
The news.
Some news. Let's do it. In my first story from darkreading.com, a story from Nate Nelson, evil XDR researcher turns Palo Alto Software into the perfect malware. A security researcher revealed a clever exploit of Palo Alto Network's extended detection and response, that's XDR software, demonstrating how attackers can control it like a malicious tool. Shmuel Cohen from SafeReach demonstrated how he reversed and manipulated Palo Alto's Cortex product, using it to deploy malicious programs like ransomware. Palo Alto has patched most of the vulnerabilities he exploited, but the risk to similar XDR solutions remains uncertain. XDR tools demand extensive access to systems to function effectively, which inspired Cohen's unconventional approach. By reverse engineering Cortex and manipulating its files, he gained control over the software, demonstrating the potential for serious breaches. Palo Alto has addressed some of the vulnerabilities highlighted by Cohen, but left others unresolved, including the lack of encryption for Cortex's sensitive files, a weakness that attackers across different XDR platforms could exploit. Tom, you are no stranger to exploiting or you are no strangers to exploit opportunities or surface attack areas. In this particular case, we are not talking about a particular attack surface or identifiable objects. We're talking about a platform that is meant to protect you from them in some capacity, if not detect them early on for execution. I have unlocked a new level of paranoia with this because I don't know which way is which, because if some common individual could take this tool and use it, I'm pretty certain that we'll call them the malicious actors, the bad guys out there, are doing the exact same thing. So the question is, how long has this been happening? And what are the ways around this? Is this just not allowing anything to have access to anything? Consequently, we're back to a true zero trust framework. What are your thoughts?
Maybe, but before we decide that the sky is falling and we can't use a EDR software because it now becomes a vector attack.
Don't interrupt my thinking here though. Don't. This isn't
exactly news. If you can remember that Norton made a tool for Exchange that did mail filtering, and we discovered they were using a flawed version of PKZIP because they never updated the underlying thing on there. So people found they could exploit, you send a zip file, and when it unzipped it, it actually ran the exploit and you got control of the Exchange server. The tools meant to protect us have sometimes resulted in us being insecure. I think this comes out of not having the right people making the tools, because what happens as these companies become more corporate, they're like, the weird dude with the green hair, we don't need him here anymore. He doesn't, he's not a fit for them. The dude with green hair presented at 3 DEF CONs and seems to be able to figure out anything and take it apart. So that's the, when you don't have the right cybersecurity minded people there that understand how things can go wrong, you end up with a product that becomes, instead of a way to protect, it becomes another attack surface. And anything that becomes complex is, has potentials for this. But we've seen lots of products over time that there's ways that we can send commands to it that turn it into an exploit. It's very interesting to be able to do that. But sometimes when you start really digging into it, you're like, yeah, anyone who would have been a Black Hat presenter or a DEF CON presenter would have also said, yeah, this is how I would attack it, because we know the average people were trying to push the product out the door and not really doing the creative thinking and really sitting and saying the what ifs that are necessary to make a better product.
I love that you're clearing the noise. What you're saying is, hey, listen, a shovel was invented, and it's a great tool along with a hammer. However, we have determined that both of them could be used maliciously. And it doesn't mean that we should get rid of the shovel and the hammer. We're pretty certain that they're going to have a lot of great uses. However, if mishandled, if the policies are not set in place to use the shovel and the hammer accordingly, bad things could happen with it. I'm trying to put the pin back in my grenade that was going off of my paranoia. So you're saying it's always been there, but in this particular case, they're just misusing it to show that it can be misused. But here's the big but, there's a lot of benefit out of these tools. And we just have to kind of tighten the clamp down a little bit more, maybe implement less orthodox corporate procedures, because those individuals that presented at these security conferences really know what they're talking about, but they may not fit in the new larger corporate atmosphere, which may unfortunately have left some loose ends available for the bad guys.
Yeah. It takes that really, what if people asking that question all the time. It seems like a time suck. Like, we paid these particular individuals with this creative thinking a lot of money to poke at it, and they didn't even find anything. Well, no, you don't want to find it in the wild. They'll find something. You prefer it to be found in-house, not out in the wild as a presentation, because I'm sure there's some Palo Alto learned about it. I didn't read the whole actual report to see when the disclosure happened. But yeah, that's not a happy disclosure that they were a talk at Black Hat.
It is amazing what can be done with the smallest just item, and you can turn it into something horrible. Inversely, you could turn it into something amazing. And I'm hearing that Microsoft is now doing the exact same things with a picture and their headshot and making you sexy and making me do tap dance and all this cool stuff if they can manage my huge head on the camera. What are your thoughts? Go into the next story.
Now, with a story over here from VentureBeat, Microsoft shows off VASA 1, an AI framework that makes human headshots talk and sing. Microsoft has unveiled VASA 1, an AI framework that transforms static human headshots into animated talking and singing videos. Unlike previous methods, VASA 1 requires minimal input using a single headshot and an audio file to animate the image with synchronized lip movements, expressions, and the head gestures. Although Microsoft showcased several impressive samples, including a rendition of the Mona Lisa rapping, the company emphasized that this technology is purely for research purposes and has no plans to commercial release due to the potential deepfake misuse. VASA 1 aims to balance its potential benefits like advertising, social media, promotion, with the risks associated with deepfake technology. While Microsoft sees various uses for VASA in education, accessibility, emotional support, it is also focused on handling the ethical issues of deep fake manipulating and stresses needed for responsible technology use. Tony, are we going to be replaced by this soon? They just got to grab one headshot.
I don't even know if it's you right now. I opened the show up with saying I am 100% convinced that you and Jason Slagle are not, you're not separate individuals. I am now questioning that, saying I need to go upstream a little bit further. There's someone else that makes like avatar versions of each of you, and this is fascinating. What was the Schwarzenegger? Is it running? What was the Running Man?
Total Recall.
Not Total Recall. No. Where they make the video of him fighting.
That was Running the Man? Running Man one.
The Running Man. And I remember someone saying, "Oh, that'll never happen because it's video." We're here. Right now, we are here. It will be impossible to discern, is this a human or a robot? Was there any input, or was this voice that you're hearing actually just pulled off of one of the YouTube videos, or a FaceTime video that got somehow exploited, or a Marco Polo message? And what is going to happen with that simple drop of genetic, like the build material to build out an entire persona that can then be manipulated in any way, shape, or form imaginable? My brain is struggling with this. I do love thinking about how much better I will be with some of this stuff. But then this goes back to the movies where people are in their little cocoons, and they have their, if you remember the Bruce Willis movie, where they're all living in their virtual lives, but they're all, you know, kind of slowly debilitating themselves in these little pods.
Yeah. The Matrix. But,
well, yeah. And what I'm trying to figure out is, what is the next step for this? I am terrified in the way that it could go, because we've seen the movies. But I am so excited about what could happen, the benefits, the positives out of this whole thing. I just haven't seen them in great clarity yet. What are your thoughts on this, Tom?
I think they're interesting. And it's definitely going to create a lot more deep fakes that are going to lead to a lot more BS. We're already seeing that, because if you are good at motion graphics, this remapping tool has been more available to you for a while. It's been used in, obviously, Hollywood. I kind of think back of to that movie, The Irishman. I was like, because they made the younger versions of some of those people as they jump back and forth. And it's like, it's the same actor, but they can just remap them to the younger self so perfectly. Like, there's not anything about the movie that makes you tipped onto it. For now, there's still a few flaws that they have. And one of my jokes is, tell them when you think you may be getting deep faked, tell them to turn their head and cough. Those two things will actually work, because it has a hard time rendering side profiles. And if you do something that is not voice expected, it actually has a hard time doing it, because it goes, that's not a normal voice noise. So it'll actually struggle a little bit with that. It does like normal conversation pretty well. I haven't seen any of them that can actually survive that little extra that you try to do, because it's outside of its normal voice. So I think it's really interesting. But then when we want to know if we're talking to a real person, because at some point, does some of that matter if it's not a real person? If you can deliver the content and it's created by people, then maybe there is a good use for it. If I can just get the emotion into the script and have me do it, and I can be out riding my bicycle right now because it's really sunny outside, I'm okay with that.
Well, that's, you know, they have, frankly, the keywords, the safe words, the home words, whatever you want to call them, for that authentication key that you're talking to your family members. I think that is a critical component. Yeah. And that was originally positioned as, hey, if a stranger's trying to pick up your kid, here's the safe word that you know that it's actually coming from us. But this now goes into AI, fraudulent AI manufactured material. And ironically, the ageless doctor comment, turn your head and cough, is applicable as AI. Well. It's a good job on that little nugget.
Those funny little things, you know. Speaking of drops in ransomware.
I got a story about it. Let's talk about it.
All right.
In my next story from Bill Tolis, from bleepingcomputer.com, ransomware payments drop to a record low of 28% in Q1 of 2024. Ransomware payments dropped sharply to 28% in Q1 of 2024, marking a tough beginning for cyber criminals. Companies increasingly refuse to pay, driven by better security and legal pressure against meeting extortion demands. Despite fewer payments, ransom profits soared to $1.1 billion, that's U.S., in 2023. The average ransom payment in Q1 2024 fell by 32%, while the median rose by 25%, suggesting a shift towards moderate amounts. The initial infiltration methods are unknown, and in nearly half of reported cases, with remote access and vulnerability exploitation being common. Law enforcement actions, notably the FBI's Lockbit disruption, have rattled major ransomware gangs, leading to payment disputes and exit scams. The disruption prompted some affiliates to operate independently or exit cybercrime altogether. Akira emerged as the most active ransomware, responsible for breaches in over 250 organizations, according to FBI reports. Tom, inflation's up, prices are up, everything, house prices are, everything is, but ransomware costs are down. So is that the silver lining in this whole process? I'm trying to figure out, what are your thoughts on this? Is it because the security, they do mention it, about security mechanisms tightening up, about, frankly, the insurance companies are saying, no, we're not going to deal with it. But what is the impact if someone's not going to pay it? What is the impact of a company? We know the percentages of companies that fail in the event of a ransomware attack. What are your thoughts on this entire situation? Because I don't see it going well, even though it sounds like it's good because the prices are dropping.
Yeah. So whenever you talk about crime, the challenge is because we're trying to put a statistics on something that's very broad. So it's always a lot of variables involved. First, security is getting better. That's the good news. We're starting to get rid of admin, and we're starting to have better passwords, and we're starting to have an understanding that you don't want to be in the news, and companies are learning the insurance companies may not cover them if they lie on those insurance forms, so that doesn't get the ransomware paid. So there's a lot of factors going now. The other side, the effectiveness of law enforcement to be disruptive to these is really interesting. The problem is with law enforcement's attitude previously and problem of the metrics is law enforcement looks for wins, and wins aren't disruption. Wins are people in handcuffs and people arrested. That isn't going to happen in ransomware. So when they readjusted strategy and said a win is disrupting these people, knocking them offline, knocking the servers offline, that gave a different, more achievable goal for law enforcement. And it's really effective. There's already, no honor among thieves. So when someone comes up to be the larger ransomware group and everyone trusts them, it becomes, well, I don't want to work with this person that started yesterday because they're just going to take my money and run. And so working with a more, in the criminal world, reputable system. So when that reputable systems gets infiltrated, well, who else is infiltrated? You break the confidence of all the different ransomware operators, and it causes disruption in there, and there's just less people to action on it. So even if they have access to these systems, they don't have any way to action on that access, or at least don't have as easy of a method by using the different tools that are available to them. So it's nice to see that the overall effect of law enforcement changing strategy of what a win looks like, being disruption combined with better security, means we have less ransomware payments. And well, that's a good thing.
So with the playing field completely level, because this can be applied from anywhere in the world, and there is no way to truly orchestrate legal actions, accountability, execution, and coordination around the world in one well orchestrated machine. Is it the accountability that's lacking at this point? And so now we're just strictly on a more aggressive defense, a more timely defense, which disrupts them? Or are we going to need to go full court press where we are now hunting down these individuals in multiple geographic locations and applying accountability in a single framework? What is the best path forward on that?
We just don't have the right in proper reciprocity with where these people live. It is a above my pay grade geopolitical quagmire they face with these countries. So because we're just going to take that off the table as something me and Tony aren't going to solve here in this news topic, let's go to what we do actionably affect, and it's how we handle our security posture. Like, I can't keep them from poking at the locks, but I can put better locks on that will defend me against them. So that's the status of where we're at in that fight. Now, I'd love for people to solve problems at the congressional and governance levels, but I don't see those countries getting along with us and us getting along with them anytime soon and having full extradition of those people. That is on the really hopeful, not likely, because we can't get any other meaningful legislation passed by them. So yeah, I'm not going to, they can't handle the small stuff. The big stuff is probably a little dysfunctional for them.
I was positioning more, less from the extradition and more from the prosecution locally. So it has a singular, as opposed to a single point prosecution. So they can be prosecuted accordingly to the location of data, whatever their governance, factors are, with a singular law of accountability that could be across the globe. Anyway, that's a whole new conversation. In fact, what I would love to do is hear from the MSP community out there, because it's clear that all of us are being attacked from frankly, everyone that we're talking about right now. And what are your thoughts on this subject? We have a Discord server where we actually are part of the arguments. I mean, passionate discussions every single day. Log in there. Let us know your thoughts on that. And as Tom mentioned, Tom and I cannot cover this in one day. It's just impossible. But Tom and I can cover some notables. Let's jump into them.
This story comes to us from Engadget. Slack has now made AI tools available to all of its paying customers following an initial release to select users earlier this year. These tools include auto-generated channel recaps, summarizing key highlights and discussions, and thread recaps for shorter conversations. Users can opt for daily recaps and utilize the conversational search to find specific chats more easily. Additionally, Slack now supports Japanese and Spanish. Integration with third-party apps like Salesforce, Einstein's Copilot, is also on the horizon. While usefulness of the tools remains uncertain, they offer potential enhancements to Slack's functionality, such as finding those memes you might have missed during the daily conversation. This article comes from Bleeping Computer. A GitHub flaw or design choice lets attackers spread malware through Microsoft repository URLs, making them seem credible and affecting any public GitHub repository. Attackers upload malware disguised as legitimate files and comments, exploiting GitHub's file upload feature. Even if the comments are deleted, the files remain accessible. Additionally, companies like NVIDIA or Google could unknowingly host malware in their repositories. While GitHub has removed malware linked to Microsoft, HTTP router and AIMMY remains. GitHub and Microsoft have yet to respond to inquiries about the issue.
In my first notable mention from Polygon.com, Discord wants to void your right to sue them in court. Discord's recent Terms of Service update introduces an arbitration clause, stripping users' ability to sue the platform or engage in class action lawsuits. Under the new Terms of Service, disputes will be resolved privately or through arbitration. This process, often favoring companies, can limit transparency and appeal rights, potentially leaving users feel unheard and their rights compromised. Users have until May 15th to opt out via email, preserving the right to pursue legal action if necessary. In my next notable mention from ArsTechnica.com, LastPass users targeted in phishing attacks good enough to trick even the savvy ones. A sophisticated phishing campaign targeted LastPass users employing various communication channels to trick them into revealing their master passwords. LastPass officials stated the attackers utilized an advanced phishing kit known as Crypto Chameleon. This campaign is the latest in a series of attacks against LastPass, with previous incidents compromising user data. The phishing kit offers features like a counterfeit single sign-on page, and voice call capabilities, enabling threat actors to create convincing scams. Users are advised to stay cautious against such scams and double-check communications with services directly. In today's resource of the week, Cybersecurity Leadership Virtual Summit. Check out the Cybersecurity Leadership Virtual Summit hosted by Empath, a free 2-hour event on April 26th, starting at 2 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. This summit is designed for MSP professionals, especially those in leadership roles. Topics include MSP top trends in 2024, key challenges like conflict of interest and talent acquisition, cybersecurity sales strategies, and more. Plus, don't miss out on Gamified Incident Response Experience, hosted by Bob Miller and a team of security experts. Check out the webinar link on the show notes below.
There are plenty of amazing upcoming events taking place across the community, so let's see what's happening this week. Starting today, an in-person event, the Cyber Defense Lab Built for MSPs, presented by Huntress in Chicago, Illinois. And then on Thursday, an in-person event, the MSP Revenue Generator in Boston, Massachusetts. And on Friday at 2 p.m. Eastern Time, Cybersecurity Leadership Virtual Summit from Empath. And coming from the MSP Media Network this week, we have tomorrow at 10 a.m. Eastern Time, an all-new episode of AI Roundup, followed on Friday at 11 a.m. Eastern by a new episode of MSP Community Live, and then that same day at noon, Bits and Books will be back for episode 8 featuring Deliberate Discomfort.
Are you searching for fresh strategies, viewpoints, or even a competitive edge for your MSP or IT services company? If so, our book club, Bits and Books, is exactly what you're looking for. I'm Marnie Stockman, and as your host, I bring my experience as an educator, an author, and MSP advisor to each episode. using lessons from amazing books like Getting Naked, Leaders Eat Last, and many more. I aim to help you and others reach your goals. Our book club brings lively debates, deep insights, and unique perspectives based on our own experiences. Each episode features MSP owners and industry leaders dissecting books that inspire, challenge, and spark new ideas. Whether you're a seasoned professional or just starting out, I invite you to join me and my friends for the next episode of Bits and Books, available on the MSP Media Network YouTube channel every month. Hope to see you there.
So how'd you like today's show? If you like it, please hit that thumbs up button. If you didn't, make sure you hit it an odd number of times so you feel like you are absolutely satisfied with your hatred towards us, but we get the like as well. And if you want to hear more, go ahead and hit that subscribe button on YouTube or your favorite podcatcher. Did you know that we have a Discord server where we post these stories all week long? You can even propose your own stories and even vote on which ones we're going to cover. As our friend Rich Benke says, make sure you tell a friend. Also, be sure you follow us on social media at MSP Media TV. And if you have any questions, email us news@mspmedia.tv for answers on the next episode. Or you can just call us and leave us a voicemail at 833-MSP-NETWORK. Tom, thank you so much for today's show. Today's episode is 199. That means on Tuesday's episode. I don't even know. On the next episode, it's going to be episode number 200. So the question is it going to be you? Is it going to be Jason? Or is it going to be Tom Slagle or Jason Lawrence? I don't know what it's going to be, but I know that the person that's controlling the avatars between you has to make a decision.
Yes. Person controlling the avatar. We're just going to use Microsoft after this.
That's all we need.
We replace both of us. Let's go boy, bike riding.
So go ahead and land the plane. Wrap it up for us.
Thanks everyone for joining. Join our Discord. Hit us up in the socials and engage with us there. Have a wonderful, engaging debate about these spicy topics. And let me know what you think about the ransomware and all the other fun things we talked about.
Absolutely. Everyone, stay safe and be educated.
This has been a broadcast of the MSP Media Network.
Palo Alto Software is now making the perfect malware. Microsoft makes heads. I can't. One more time.